Welcome to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees, a conversation for those who own, manage or protect intellectual property.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of the Green Shoots podcast, where today we're diving into the fascinating world of green innovation, this time with a special focus on plant-based meat. I'm James Myatt, a partner at Appleyard Lees in our chemistry and life sciences sector. I've been working for many years in the food and beverage sector from a chemistry perspective, looking at protecting innovations in taste and texture and in different food ingredients and products, and also in beverages with innovations in additives for various purposes, and also flavors and aromas in other household and consumer products. So this sector is very interesting for me, and it's been interesting to look into it in more detail from a patenting perspective. I'm joined today by a colleague of mine, Jack Braithwaite, now trainee patent attorney in our team, and I'll leave it to him to introduce himself.
Yeah, I'm Jack, and this is my first time getting involved with the Inside Green Innovation Progress Report. It's been interesting to take a dive into all these plant-based meat products. I've got a background in protein biochemistry and molecular biology. So when I started looking at these plant-based meats, it didn't feel like a huge leap for me. At the end of the day, it's all processing challenges in this sector are really problems of protein behavior. So it felt like my cup of tea. So obviously this is my first time, but the report's been running for about 5 years, and you've been involved with it for, is it 4 years now, James?
3 years, I think. And it's been quite an interesting time for the sector generally in alternative proteins, but also for plant-based meat in particular. During that time, there was probably quite a surge in interest in plant-based meat products that everyone would have seen on the shelves and in restaurants just after COVID. And it's perhaps been a bit of a mixed picture since then, with interest possibly declining or at least stabilizing at a certain level. Has that been borne out with what you've been looking into, Jack?
Yeah, I'd say that was pretty much my understanding of it. There seemed to have been a huge boom in this market between 2019 and 2021. And it's hard to say whether we're just seeing a correction or alternatively, we're now seeing a genuine dip in consumer interest.
Yeah, there is certainly still a need for these kinds of products, alternative protein, to reduce the environmental impact of meat production and meat consumption within the population generally. So it's not a problem that has gone away, and there isn't that many solutions to that problem. So from that very general perspective, I would expect innovation and interest in this sector to continue at some reasonably high level, but yeah, it perhaps isn't booming like it was a few years ago.
You say that, but I've actually got some stats here taken from Viva, which is the leading vegan campaigning charity in the UK. And the number of people moving to a vegan diet between 2014 and 2019 has actually quadrupled. And they reported in 2024 that about 4.7% of the adult population, which is about 2.5 million people, have recently turned to vegan diets. So there does seem to be an appetite for plant-based diets generally, but maybe actually plant-based meats are specifically struggling.
Yeah, there does seem to have been some notable challenges for the industry over the last few years. And you know, anecdotally, where we're based in Manchester, some well-known vegetarian restaurants have closed. And I think it's widely seen that there's perhaps a few products on the supermarket shelves, but looking at it as a whole, quite a few new vegan and vegetarian restaurants have opened in the area. So it's perhaps not the whole story to focus on notable closures, but there's perhaps been an overall bit of a turnover in the sector and in the industry locally. And I think that possibly bears out nationally, because it is still quite a important sector with, like you said, Jack, a lot of people interested in this kind of diet, and these products are an important part of providing options for vegans and vegetarians to have a source of protein in their diet. So yeah, not a totally rosy picture for the industry, and there's a lot of challenges that we've seen through this work. What are the most notable challenges that you've noticed, Jack?
So we actually reported on some of these in the article. I think primarily people are worried about cost of living, cost of food generally. And the average cost of some of these plant-based products do seem to be significantly more expensive than the traditional meat alternatives. I think we reported in the article, didn't we, that there is about an 82% increase in price compared to the traditional meat, which, I mean, that's not insignificant. There's actually also a increased fear over the health impact of ultra-processed foods. I think there's been a lot of reporting on that recently.
Yeah, no, I've certainly been hearing a lot about ultra-processed foods, and you see the documentaries on television, and I've one of those people that read the book Ultra-Processed People. So I think there is a lot more awareness of ultra-processing, and that applies to these alternative protein food sources. It's perhaps a little bit unfair, though, to necessarily associate the negatives of ultra-processing food to these products. Would you agree with that, Jack?
I would agree with that, but unbelievably, according to this survey that we actually reported on from YouGov, after ready meals, which have to be the most ultra-processed food option in your supermarket, the most identifiable ultra-processed food was actually plant-based meats. So people are looking at plant-based meats in the shape of steaks, burgers, bacon, and readily identifying that as an ultra-processed food. And I don't think it's necessarily supported by the scientific data that's being published at the minute either. Have you heard of the UK Biobank? It's collecting stuff like genetic biomarker data, lifestyle data, and it's correlating that with an individual's healthcare records. So they're getting a good idea of what they're eating, what their blood work looks like, and what kind of illnesses they're suffering with. And they found at the University of Surrey, when they're going through all this data, that there was actually no clear risk of incorporating these plant-based meats into a vegan or vegetarian diet. So no, to answer your question, no, I don't think it's totally fair.
Yeah, that's really interesting that perhaps there isn't a scientific basis for any ultra-processing of food to lead to a health detriment. It's probably a question of public opinion, as with a lot of these alternative protein products, where different aspects of public opinion need to be overcome for them to be more widely adopted. And yeah, perhaps there is, specifically in plant-based meats, a deeper awareness of the fact that ultra-processed or highly processed foods can still be healthy. And it's probably certain aspects of ultra-processing, such as making calories too readily available or the use of additives with potential detrimental health effects, such as potential carcinogens. And it's those aspects of ultra-processing that you need to be careful of consuming too much of. And perhaps if the public can be a bit more educated in terms of plant-based meat that don't have these drawbacks, because yeah, it's generally a protein source, so you don't have the calorie issue. And if suspected carcinogenic additives are avoided in the processing, then they can certainly potentially be a healthy food. And hopefully the public can get over that hurdle of perception of these products.
I think the only other limitation I can think of would be people's general opinion about how these plant-based meats and products might actually taste and the texture differences between that and the traditional meats. But what we've actually seen is, due to all of the innovation that we've actually reported on before and even before then, we're seeing that blind taste tests are showing that these products are as good as, or even better in some instances, than the traditional meat versions. There was one particular study that looked at about 2,700 adults, gave them a blind taste test of over 20 different plant-based products, and they actually found that fillets, burgers, chicken nuggets, and sausages were all at least as good as the traditional alternative. So I think there's definitely cause for optimism, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's really interesting then. It shows what innovation can achieve, and it's certainly pretty promising for the sector.
So on that note, James, what does the report tell us about the filings in 2023, which is the year we were looking at for this research?
So I think the most striking result from the analysis is that there was another drop in the overall number of new patent applications filed in 2023 compared to the previous year. So we did see and report on a drop in filing numbers from a peak in 2021 through to 2022. So that trend has continued for the last 2 years of the data that we've seen. So that perhaps correlates with the things we've seen generally in the marketplace and in the industry. However, it is worth noting that overall, the number of new patent filings is relatively high compared to, say, the 5 years previous. So although it does seem to be falling back from a peak, there is overall a lot of innovation still in this sector. A lot of new patent applications going in for various improvements in these products and manufacturing techniques for these products. It is also quite interesting to look at where they're coming from in terms of territories. There's been quite strong filing numbers in the USA and Europe, also South Korea and Japan, and a few other countries around the world which you might expect to be innovating in this area. But the overall decline in the filing numbers isn't evenly distributed across those countries. There does seem to be a more significant drop-off in patent filing activity from the USA compared to, say, Europe, and the numbers are more stable in the other territories I mentioned as well.
I'd say that was one of the most surprising things we found in the report this year. The fact that filings are staying so steady in Europe and have dropped so significantly in the US. If you look back over the last years of doing this report, you'll see that actually the top spot for filings have been hotly contested by both Europe and US. So what I don't really have an answer to why that's happened, but it would be interesting to dive into.
Yeah, so because we're looking at data from 2023 here, because of the lag in new patent applications being published, we really need to have in mind what was happening in 2023. I know more recently there has been a pullback in funding, particularly public funding in the US for green technologies, and that might affect this industry in particular. But that's a more recent phenomenon rather than explaining why innovation has dipped from 2022 to 23. But it perhaps suggests that might continue, particularly in the US. Although, having said that, if we look at the individual companies that are responsible for the most filings in this sector, it doesn't really bear out that the US companies are pulling back. Jack, could you look into that data for us in a bit more detail?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing to say is that when we compare the number of unique assignees with the number of priority applications, so a priority application is the first filing to a particular invention, we find that at least over the last few years, there's a 50% fewer assignees than there are priority applications, which heavily suggests that whoever is filing applications has the capacity to go on and file applications to multiple inventions each year. So that's our first indication that it's the larger companies that are mainly filing in this area, and it's not actually divided over many small companies. So when we look at the top filers, we found Cargill, Unilever, Rocket Frères, Fuji Oil, and Nestle as our top filers. And when we look at those top five filers, we actually only find two of those companies, Cargill and Unilever, that have actually increased the number of filings in 2023 compared to 2022. So Cargill, for those that don't know, is a supplier. So you won't actually see their name on the shelf in the supermarket, but they do provide ingredients to many different companies. So you will inadvertently be eating many of their products when you're picking up food from the shelves in your local supermarket. Unilever, on the other hand, is obviously one of the biggest global consumer goods companies, and they do develop food for their own consumer brands. So I imagine many more people are familiar with that name. Interestingly, though, of these two companies, it's Unilever that might be pulling out of the sector. Did you want to expand a bit on that, James?
Yeah, so we've seen earlier this year an announcement that Unilever have sold a section of their business, their brand, The Vegetarian Butcher, to Vivera. So with Unilever, there seems to be this uptick in filings in 2023. So we can perhaps correlate that with a preparation for divesting that part of the business and selling it to Vivera to take on. So the reports we've seen suggest that Unilever consider that maybe not part of their core business. But it's encouraging to see large multinational companies like Cargill making consistent number of new innovations in this area over the last, say, 3 or 4 years. So they are obviously heavily invested in the sector and believe it will be a successful business for them going forward. And yeah, we'll look out to see whether they maintain this level of innovation in the next couple of years. And yeah, Jack, you mentioned about Nestle looking like a significant drop off in their patent filings. I mean, obviously, it's difficult to really know why that might be, but we do see in different industries almost a cyclical filing strategy where a business will innovate intensively for a few years and file a lot of patent applications, and then the focus might shift more to scaling up production and perhaps developing manufacturing routes that might not be patentable in themselves, or they may decide to rely on trade secrets to protect those innovations. So during that part of the cycle, and new patent filings that we'd look at in this report might drop for a couple of years. So perhaps that's what's happening with Nestlé and maybe to a lesser extent at Fuji Oil. And the more early stage innovation that is hopefully still continuing in the R&D departments in these companies will be the subject of maybe a more of a spike in new patent filings in the coming year or two. And that's a trend that we can look at in future reports to see if that bears out. So of course, we've talked a lot about the overall numbers of filings in different territories and from specific companies, but it's also interesting to look at what specifically the innovations that are covered by these filings are. And we've looked into that on a sort of moderately general level. So Jack, could you take us through a few of the main themes that these new patent filings are aimed at covering?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say one of the primary areas of innovation we're seeing are in manufacturing methods. That's appearing particularly strong. So this is basically relating to how they're producing and extruding these plant-based meats and forming them into the burgers or the sausages that you see in the supermarket. It's interesting that they're innovating in this area in particular, because this addresses one of the problems we spoke about earlier, about the cost of each of these products. So obviously, if we can get more efficient with how we're making these plant-based meats, then naturally we'll be able to bring the price down. But if we were to go even more specific as to what these companies are filing in, I'd say there was a surprising number of applications relating to fish analogs. So this is basically where we're creating fillets of either battered or frozen plant-based fish analogs. Many of those applications came from Nestlé, which is interesting because they've just released a new brand of plant-based white fish. I don't know if you've seen it in the supermarket, James.
No, I haven't actually, but I think after this I'll be going and finding some and giving it a go.
And we're also seeing Fuji Oil filing in this area as well. So I think we can expect as consumers to see a lot more of these types of products come out. And we also talked about how these plant-based meats are readily identified as ultra-processed foods. Well, the actual look and appearance of these products are getting better all the time, and we're seeing a lot of innovations into the finer details of making these products look as realistic in terms of their traditional meat alternatives as possible. We're seeing a lot of innovation into adding in fat analogs and marbling into, say, plant-based steaks, which won't necessarily just change the look of the product, but actually it might align slightly more closely the way the meat actually cooks and the mouthfeel of the steak, actually bringing it closer to what we see with traditional meats.
As we've seen, I guess, for a couple of years now, is a lot of this innovation is very high-tech ways of imitating traditional meat products that people have consumed and enjoyed for many years. And something that we've talked about, I know, Jack, before, is the other option that there is to reduce meat-based protein intake is to move to eating more whole foods, so protein sources derived from plants in their more sort of natural form without the processing. And that perhaps isn't an area where there needs to be much innovation in terms of new patent filings. So I wonder if that is where this sector might ultimately move. However, as you've described about a lot of innovations in imitating meat, there is this traditional meat consumption in the public, so particularly in the US, with a large population, a long tradition of eating roasted meats, barbecues, etc., that I know a lot of people enjoy. So there is perhaps a future for this sector in really closely mimicking those products to win back perhaps the US market and hopefully get over the general perception over there that there is perhaps a backlash against the alternative protein products. Because, yeah, as I said at the start of the podcast, the environmental drivers for reducing the reliance on traditional meat, then they're not going to go anywhere very soon the demands on water, the demands on land that meat production has, and the environmental detrimental effects that are produced from meat manufacture are certainly very real and are only going to be more challenging in the future. Yeah, so certainly innovation is part of the answer for this development of this sector. And yeah, we expect to see continued innovation over the next couple of years. So that feels like a pretty good place to wrap things up. Thank you for listening to this, and thank you, Jack, for taking us through the report and those findings. If you're interested and would like to learn more, then please visit appyardlees.com, where you can find the Inside Green Innovation Progress Report, 5th edition, in full. And if you have any specific questions for Jack or I, then we would be delighted if you'd get in touch, and we're happy to discuss anything with you.
Thanks for listening to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees. If you have a question or issue you would like our IP specialist to discuss on the podcast, then email us at ip@appleyardlees.com.